Welcome to another episode of the Growth Focus Podcast, where we bring together tech leaders from all across the globe to share their insights, their time, and their expertise. My name is Gary Lafferty, your host. I'm the founder and creator of the Accelerator for Authorities, where we take tech leaders and elevate them and turn them into authorities in their field so that they may close more sales with less competition. On this particular episode, I can't wait to get started on, we have our guest, Nick, and we're going to be talking about entrepreneurial growth. We're going to be talking about funding. We're going to talk about roadblocks and so much more. So please make sure that you have a pen and paper handy and you stay for the whole episode because there's going to be so much we're going to cover today. So without further ado, Nick, it's an absolute pleasure having you here today. Why don't you start off and kick off with telling us who you are, where you're from, and what is it that you actually do?
Sure, sure. Hey, my name is Nick Teets. I'm the CEO and founder of a company called ILT Academy. ILT simply stands for I Like That. We are focused on empowering underestimated entrepreneurs in underserved communities, rural, urban, and informal settlements. Learn the art of the start.
That is fantastic. And we're going to dive far more into that because it's such an intriguing title. I love that tagline as well. So I can't wait to get dived in. But before we do, let's backtrack a little bit. You know, you've had a fascinating entrepreneurial journey, 7.5 businesses and counting. What is the most valuable lesson that you've learned from launching and scaling these ventures?
You know, I think the most valuable lesson that I've learned is, one, to be patient. Two, is to give yourself some grace along the way. It doesn't happen as fast. It never happens as fast as you want. But if you're persistent and you keep working at it and you listen to your customers, you listen to the marketplace, the chances that you're going to be more successful go way up. When you go in, you have to be headstrong. I mean, you need to be a little stubborn, right? You can't just give up. But it's really important to listen to the marketplace so that you can figure out, well, where is that soft spot so that you can penetrate the market and then do right by your customers, you know, by giving them something that they want and need.
Yeah, and I think that's such a key thing, isn't it? Is giving the market what they want. And in tech, we tend to be slightly more guilty of finding a product or creating a product or a service and then taking it to market and thinking it's the field of dreams mentality. Mm-hmm. If I build it, they would come because this is absolutely brilliant. But really, it's kind of like the wrong way around, isn't it? You're not solving a problem yet. You don't know what the market needs yet. You're just kind of jumping on this thing and hoping the market will want it.
Right, right. Yes, exactly, exactly. It's very challenging. And that's why I like saying the art of the start, because there's no one way to do it. There's lots of ways to do it. But as we like to, you know, jokingly say it when we're teaching entrepreneurs, is that make original mistakes. Don't make the same mistakes that other people have made and learn from them, because the difference between an entrepreneur and a wantrepreneur is, are you willing to take those next steps and learn from them, right?
Yeah.
And so it's really, really important to, you know, think through everything, but have a bias towards action. Like, let's actually do the stuff we're talking about, not just talk about it.
Well, I'll tell you what, I love that bias towards action, because of this, one of the things that we've been saying for those who have been listening to us for a while, know that I'm a great advocate for knowledge is not power. You've got to take action for that knowledge. If you're just learning it, like you say, the wannabe, and not taking any action, you can't really learn from it. And if you can't learn from it, you're not gaining anything.
Right.
So, yeah, I love what you said there. So listen, your current venture, before we even get there, ILT, like that, where did that name come from?
That's a really good question. So my wife and I were sitting around, you know, the dinner table, so to speak. And we noticed that when our daughter really liked something, she would say, I like that. And we would always chuckle to ourselves. And then when I started to come up with the idea for this company, I mean, we were really struggling with the name. And I said, you know, when we're working on something, when we're working on an idea, we're helping somebody like solve a problem, they will just stand back and say like, I like that. And I was like, well, what if that was the name of the company? What if we just called it I Like That? And I was like, it'd be cool if people said, I Like That Academy. And it just kind of stuck. So we were like, let's go with it. I mean, and I did market test it, meaning I asked other entrepreneurs, like, what if I just called it I Like That? And they're like, yeah, I like that.
So I like that. Yeah. Out the mouth of babes, right? Out the mouth of babes comes this fantastic name.
Yeah.
So for those people who don't know, ILT Academy, that you focus on helping underestimated entrepreneurs.
Yes.
What was the moment or the experience that made you realize that gap needed to be felt?
Well, it really started with myself in one and in a few aspects. I was going to say one aspect, but it was actually a few aspects. You know, one of the aspects is, I haven't sold a $1 billion company. And, you know, as a budding entrepreneur, as an aspiring innovator to like looking for ways to bring new value to the market, there were many times where, I'd be in the room, especially in the corporate world. And, you know, there'd be a lot of, that's a really good idea, Nick. But, you know, I don't know. They were underestimating my capacity to deliver things to the market. And then when I started launching companies with other people and doing other small businesses, one of the things that I noticed is when you're around other founders is that the ones that haven't sold anything yet or had a major exit, they're often being overlooked. And in one of my previous startups that I started before ILT, we were working on developing an IoT solution to help people with visible and invisible disabilities communicate to law enforcement in a moment of crisis. I mean, we wanted to help people not get shot or killed. And we were doing it. And when I was pitching and our team was pitching for venture funding, a lot of the funders were like, well, it's a really cool idea, but we don't want to fund that because that's not going to be a $1 billion company in 7 years. And I was like, but we're saving people's lives. And they were like, yeah, but it's not going to be worth $1 billion. So come back to us when you have a $1 billion opportunity. And if that doesn't work, we'll fund your next idea. And if that doesn't work, we'll fund your next idea. And so the things that just kind of came together is like, okay, if people will fund certain types of ideas and people will fund certain types of entrepreneurs, I must be missing something on like, how do we put these things together? And if I don't know it, and I've been entrepreneuring for like 15 years and been in the technology space, there's probably a lot more people that don't understand, one, how to do this, and two, they're either being underestimated as an entrepreneur because they haven't done this a lot or at all, and or sometimes it's their idea is being underestimated because I don't think the world needs just $1 billion opportunities. There's a lot of other businesses that need to exist to make the marketplace work and to solve important problems and challenges in communities all around the world.
No, I totally agree. Isn't that a funny way? People tend to just gravitate to what is the norm, you know, and they are saying, unless it's $1 billion, so everyone's trying to run for that $1 billion idea. Yeah. There are so many businesses that can serve so many people and solve so many problems that aren't necessarily a $1 billion idea, but are good for the business. They're good for the nation. They're good for the economy, you know, and they're good for all around. So that being said, let's move on to growth and scaling and whatnot. You've now trained over 700 founders. You've helped raise over $17 million. What patterns have you seen in business that successfully scale versus those that just tend to stagnate?
Yeah, that's a really great question. You know, when looking at problems, you know, in our course, we really teach the entrepreneurs that your job isn't to come up with good solutions. It's to identify great problems that need to be solved. And then the next question is, if that's an important problem that's important to you, because again, we don't care if it's a big idea or a giant idea, how many people have this problem? And so if I said it's definitely related to the total addressable market size, like how many people have this problem? And then how quickly can you get your solution or a solution in the hands of the people that have that problem? And I think what limits businesses from scaling is, one, their ability to identify a problem that a lot of people have and they want it actually solved by an organization or a company. And so when the founder or the team haven't picked a problem that's big enough or that a lot of people have, that becomes a challenge to scaling, right? Because if only 5 people have this problem, you're not going to get very far with your idea. And then the second thing is, there's a lot of, I've seen and met a lot of entrepreneurs, especially outside of major metro areas, that they're frankly just not enough around people to understand how to scale their business. Because a lot of things can be solved over a conversation or, you know, in a small group meeting or something like that. And so the innovations that need to be made to actually like have more rapid growth and go from the growth phase to the scale phase, they just take a lot longer because there's a lot of innovations. There's a lot of things that the entrepreneur needs to figure out. And if they're not forced to to figure it out, the business just doesn't look like a scalable opportunity, or they just go at a much more linear growth instead of the hockey stick.
Yeah, totally. And I like the way we talk about the scalability of that, but you bring it right back down to, you know, the problem. There are people, businesses with plenty of problems. You know, generally we know that when we're trying to sell something, it doesn't matter if it's a product or a service or whatever, it's either people will buy it because it either makes them money, saves them money, or keeps them out of jail. All right. So what is the problem? The problem is they can't make money. So how can you solve that problem? The problem is they're spending too much money. How do you save them money? That's the problem. And how do you be compliant, for example, in keeping them out of jail? So what is the problem as opposed to what is the product or service that you're pushing?
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And really dial that down and say, okay, who's got the most problems, like you said? What is the problem? Who's got it? And I love what you said, that speed to need. Where can we get that and solve that need from a really, really start? So I want to dial that back to what we talked about before. We have been talking about this called 0 to 1.
Yeah.
0 to 1 is such an important part. And it isn't just from your $0 to your first dollar or $0 to your first million. It can mean a plethora of things if one's shifting. If, like you said, from how do I shift from product offerings to a problem offering? You're still going from 0 to 1 from there. So let's dive a little bit into that. Please explain to those who are listening, what is 0 to 1?
Yeah, well, no, I'm glad you said that because, you know, yeah, when we talked about this before, for me, 0 to 1, 0 doesn't mean 0. 0 is a circle, and it's all the resources and knowledge and skills and expertise that you already have. Almost think of it more like a circle around a campfire where you're gathering all of the assets that you have around you or that you know of, and you're gathering them together, and you're trying to figure out how do I take what I know or this problem that I've discovered or this insight that I have about a market, and how do I get it to a thing, right? To one. And so in the literal sense, it could be like we didn't have a product to now we have a product and we're delivering it to one customer. And did we meet the need? Mm. And then do they want what we just presented to them? And then how do we do that in the shortest amount of time with the least amount of resources? So 0 to 1. And so the skills to go from 0 to 1 are often overlooked because some people get there by accident. Or what I see a lot is sometimes people back into a business, right? They know they have some skill and somebody is like, well, you know, Gary, I'll pay you a little bit of money. Could you do that again? And you're like, sure. And then the next person, all of a sudden you're like doing this thing, but you didn't plan on that being a business. It just kind of started. And that's where I see a lot of entrepreneurs not build a growth oriented or scalable business because they get stuck in the lifestyle spot where they need to back up a little bit and think about what is the problem that they're actually solving. And if they want to make something that's more growth oriented, how do you make that scale? How do you turn that into a more scalable opportunity? But nonetheless, back to the 0 to 1 piece is the skills of going to 0 to 1 are different than going from 1 to 100, 100 to 1,000, 1,000 to 10,000, right? These are all different skills. And our thesis for ILT Academy is, what if you could really develop and hone those skills and get great, be great at starting companies that can hit the market faster and then rapidly build the team and then get access to a lot of capital so that you can grow the business as big as you want it to be, not as big as a VC wants it to be. How big do you want this idea or business to be? Or how many people's lives do you want to impact with your solution? Mm. Let's get really good at that skill and then find other people to manage it. Because if you don't like managing more than 20 people, let somebody else do it. Your job as the founder is to found the things you need. So found someone that loves managing people and then hand those responsibilities off and go start the next great idea.
Yeah, that's a great way of looking at it, Nick. You know, your job as a founder is to go and find, and then I found them, right? I'm going to find this idea. Now I found it. I'm going to find these people. Now I found them. I'm going to find the funding. Now I found it. What a great way analogy to look at that. You know, isn't it funny? Every day is a school day. Doesn't matter how many years being in business. I'm gonna use that again, Nick. I love that. So talking about securing major investment, you've seen people go from nothing to securing major investment.
Yes.
What do you think separates founders who get funding from those who struggle to get funding?
A couple things, but I think the number one thing is clarity and focus, especially if they are in the emerging and early stage of a business, even if they're pre-MVP and they haven't generated revenue, is that a lot of founders have like major scope creep. I mean, we're creatives. We see opportunities everywhere. And so sometimes our ideas are a little bit too big and we need to really ratchet it in and make sure that we're clear on the vision. The vision needs to be big, that big, hairy, audacious goal. That can be way out there. And you probably shouldn't even know how you're going to accomplish it. That's how big and scary it should be. But then you need to be able to immediately dial it back and say, but what we're focused on right now is this, and these are our next steps, and this is what we need funds for. And do you want to join us in that mission? Okay, so that's one. The second part is that, well, then what's the return going to be? Because investors aren't giving you the money to live on or to put in a savings account. They want you to multiply that money. And so what I tell entrepreneurs is you're not just competing against other entrepreneurs. You're competing against pole barns. You're competing against other asset classes that investor has more money than time, and they're trying to figure out how to grow it. So if you can't outpace a pole barn in the center of the country, they're going to put their money in the pole barn because the likelihood that the pole barn will fail is far less than you as a new entrepreneur. So you got to convince them that you're better than a pole barn, maybe, is a bad analogy, but I think it works.
I love that. I actually love that. You know, I'm sitting here thinking, what a great way of looking at it. Apps again, you know, what a great little insight there. Because we do tend to think, you know, and as I said, this build it, this field of dreams, build it and will come. Everyone tends to think my baby's the best and whatever I build is that people are going to love it. But it's not just tech that we, as you say, not competing about. You're competing against people, which the most bizarre thing, you know, corn picking machinery that when no one's working the fields anymore, what kind of robotics is going to go into that kind of field? That's the kind of thing that you could potentially be fighting against,
yeah.
You know, where people go on. So that's a really, really good way to look at things.
Well, and the last thing that I think really prevents entrepreneurs from being successful is, I don't know how to say it. I want to say it like really kindly, but it's like, don't waste people's time. Like when you go into a meeting, especially if you're looking to raise capital, whether it's an angel investor, an early seed venture capital fund or any of the other venture funds that are out there, is if you don't match the thesis of your investor, don't waste their time and your time because they're never going to invest in you. So I tell people, don't look at investors as investors. They're a customer. They're just going to buy part of your business. And if you don't know your customer, you will never sell to them. So treat them like customers. Know everything or as much as you can about them before walking into that meeting. Understand what kind of checks do they cut? Do they even have any dry powder? Are they ready to make a check? And don't be afraid to ask them, what does it take for me to get a check from you? How big is the check? When do you deploy the checks? Can I talk to five other founders that you've invested in? Even in that meeting, don't be afraid. Like as a founder, as the creator, you have the leverage. They might have money, which seems like you need it, but they don't have the ideas like you do. That's why you're sitting in the epicenter. You need to be as smart as you can about it and treat them like an investor. Customers.
But yeah, I like that. I mean, I've always taught people if they're talking to banks or investors, is to interview them. Mm-hmm. They're not there just to interview you. You're going to interview them because this is a relationship that you're going to get into. So you'd like, you know, if you were going for a job, and you just remind me that, you know, when we teach the youngsters here to go for a job or anybody who's looking for, you know, to move up in salary, you would ask, what is the salary? What is your expectations? When are we starting? What are this? So you've got those same things, but it's just on a different scale here. You know,
right.
What is the, when can you cut a check? How much to cut there? What is your average check that you do? What is it that you look for? You're interviewing them as much as they're interviewing you to get that information to see if it's going to be a partnership as well. So, yeah.
Well, and that's why, you know, a lot of people talk about the entrepreneurial mindset and we talk about the entrepreneur skill set. This is a skill. And in that 0-1 phase, you need to be really, really good at the skill of being an early stage entrepreneur. It's just a vocation, baker, welder, entrepreneur. Let's get good at the skills needed to go get through the 0-1 phase as fast as possible. And that means you need to get good at asking questions. You need to get good at asking the right questions so you get the answers that you need to figure out, should you even keep doing this idea? It might not be worth it as well. And you need to know that.
Yeah, good point. Good point. Well, let's go to the other end of the scale from people. Well, it doesn't ever mean the other end of the scale, but let's assume you've got the funding now, because one of the things we see all the time, and I'm sure you do as well, Nick, is that once funding has been secured, whether it be from VCs or PEs or whatever the case may be, there's this tendency now from these structures to come down and trickle down, run and run faster. You know, you've got the money now, run faster, run with it as quick as you can. And right. that causes a lot of founders then to probably ski over the tips of their skis a bit too much, right? That they're right. overextending, they're trying to scale too quickly. What is the biggest landmine that you see these founders making when they're trying to scale too quickly?
Yes. You know, the biggest thing is not understanding their target audience. You know, when we talk about Simon Sinek's got a really great talk on the diffusion of innovation, is that, you know, when we get going, you know, the people that buy our products and services early are those innovators and those early adopters. Like, they don't care if you have it all figured out, because either they have the problem is so severe that they're just looking for anything that can solve the problem, or they're like, oh my gosh, this is so cool. I need to be the first one to have that. But when we're trying to cross to that next group, the early majority, which is what we're talking about when we're talking about growth and scale, the way that those customers want information delivered to them, the way they want to receive the product, is a lot different. And that can become challenging because the buying cycle completely shifts on you. And if you aren't really documenting or unpacking what you thought was the buying cycle, like how do we get people through those funnels? When it changes on you, if it's not well documented and you don't know how to decode or unpack it, that prevents a lot of sales from happening. At the end of the day, like, this is about customer acquisition, getting your product to the market, getting that revenue in, and proving that you found your customer base, and it all shifts on you. And so that's why, like, we talk about, how do you get to product market fit? That's the key. What is product market fit for you and your business? How do you know when you have it? What's preventing you from getting more of it? And that means you got to go out and keep talking to your customers, because your customers changed. They no longer are okay with a crummy website, a half-baked onboarding process, a poor customer service, because they just liked the founder, or they liked, you know, founder-led sales are a big thing when you make that transition. These are all the things that prevent an organization from going from a really good idea to a scalable organization. And we've seen it, you know, with many tech startups across the board, they struggle to figure that out. And so that's a challenge, right? But it's really understanding your customers, especially those early adopter ones. And how do you get them to the spot where they're using, signing up, referring to other people, you know, those strong startup metrics.
Exactly. And I think that's a really great segue, I think, now from, you know, not becoming the world's best secret now. People aren't willing to, as you say, to stand for shoddy websites, shoddy customer services, shoddy product out there, you know, especially in tech today. So a big part of your work is helping entrepreneurs build credibility, build their authority. How can tech founders stand out in an industry full of experts? The thing about tech is they're just not service providers or product providers. They're deemed as experts, but then everyone's an expert because they all have to be an expert.
Right.
So how can you teach tech founders to stand out? Because they do struggle with self-promotion. That, you know, it's just not inbuilt in them. We're not majority of them.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we help them shift that mindset to going from an expert, which everybody is now, to becoming an industry authority?
Yeah, you know, that's a really great question. I've been thinking about it myself, because, you know, I will shamelessly promote any student that comes through ILT Academy, but I really struggle with talking myself about it, even though, like, I've been teaching a lot of people. But I think something that I was listening to a podcast that was referred to me, only 4% of people on the major social networks, LinkedIn, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, only 4% are actually creating content. We got to get out of the mindset that we shouldn't talk and share our point of view and share our perspective on the world. And by the way, it's like, being a dynamic person and sharing what we're interested in addition to, like, the problem that we're solving, is an attractor. And if you're building an audience, as you build your community, like, we want to know who are the people that, like, concepted this company or brought or bringing this idea to the market. And we really need to get outside of ourselves and, like, don't be afraid to share, like, what it is that we're doing. And to be frank, like, share what we're vulnerable about. Like, it may seem like you're only hearing about the people that are closing all these big deals. It's not happening like that, right? And your audience and the people that you're, and even your customer base, they want to rally for you, right? And we see that all the time in sports. We see it in, you know, with other, you know, authors and other podcasters and stuff like that. Like, they want to know that not every day is an easy day. I mean, I'm not saying you need to cry on the internet, but if you need to, like, don't be afraid to. But I think you need to get outside your, you need to get comfortable with being uncomfortable. I know it's cliche, but I think it's very apropos. Share what's going on, share what you're doing, share your point of view on the world, keep talking about why this is an important problem and what you're learning. And you will be surprised that, like, that will take the sell off of what you're talking about, because you're just being authentic and transparent. And that's what the world wants today.
And it just, I like the way you just, it is so true, but people begin, if you're listening to this or you're watching this, connect the dots on this episode. What we just heard is that if you're going out there and say right at the very beginning, I solve a problem as opposed to I provide a service.
Yes.
And now you're talking about passionately why that problem needs to be solved.
Yeah.
Other people, then you are literally picking up this loop constantly all the time. And people then are drawn to you, because in marketing, people just think it's about attracting, but it's not. It's attracting and then repelling those that aren't right for you. So by constantly going out and saying, this is the problem, it needs to be solved. If you have a problem, I am the best in the world at doing this.
Right.
You attract naturally the people that you want to attract. And you're almost eliminating the competition then, because they're not doing that. They're waiting for it to come, or they're talking about something so generic that, you know, that's not really about a problem. So, yeah, it's a nice little loop. And if that has not got you thinking when you're listening to this, guys, rewind, listen, and start thinking, I didn't think of that. That is a really interesting point.
Well, so, and if I had a call to action to people for this, it would be to answer the question, who are you and what do you do? And go say that to all your friends, you know, like, hey, say, hey, Gary, ask me who am I and what do? I know it sounds dumb, but just ask me. And then
I've just met you, Nick, who are you? And what did you actually do?
Well, I'm an innovator and an entrepreneur. As an innovator, I help discover and develop assets and activate people and ideas.
Oh, that's interesting. Tell me more.
Then the conversation just goes. But also, if you think about that, that's a landmine, sounds bad. That is a generator for content. How do I help people discover assets and discover things? How do I help them develop the assets around them? How do I activate people and ideas? Like, regardless of where, and then the second part to that statement is, it doesn't matter if I'm the lead UX person at the Nerdery, the head of innovation at Lifetime Fitness, or the founder of ILT Academy. I will always be, or the head brisket maker at my brisket company that I'm starting, I will always be an innovator and an entrepreneur. And the question is, who are you and what do you do?
Yeah. And it's that people fall into the trap of giving themselves the label
or the name
of the job or the role. And that's not what it is. I mean, in fact, it's one of the things we teach all the time is your pitch. And what is your pitch to people that continues the conversation? You know, like, I'm an accountant. Then people now have a preconceived idea of what an accountant is, but then you've just pulled yourself. You might be the world's best accountant.
Right.
But you've pulled yourself in with the world's worst.
Right.
Because you just left it there. By changing that pitch is such an important part. But again, common sense isn't common practice. And if we could just help people change that, what a start that would really be. So actually, talking about common practice, sense is not common practice. Your program helps founders, what you would call, fail small before they fail big.
Yes.
Explain that to us and why that's important.
Yeah. So I think that there are, when we talk about the world of innovators and entrepreneurs, when I say innovation, I don't mean invention. Sometimes there's invention in there, but when I say innovation, I mean bringing new value. So it's taking things that already exist and then how do we make it better? There's got to be a better way, right? Then on the entrepreneur side of things, there's people that are entrepreneurial and then there's the entrepreneurs. And there's a lot of people that are wondering where they are at. And so in our program, we are teaching the skills of an entrepreneur. And I like to say, well, not everybody is an entrepreneur. And of the people that are entrepreneurs, but not everybody's great at this. That's totally okay. But the difference between entrepreneur and entrepreneurial is your ability to lean into an idea. Someone that's entrepreneurial, they'll lean in, they're like, oh, there's got to be a better way to do this. This sounds cool, but they're afraid. An entrepreneur goes all the way, and the only thing they can do before they hit their face on the ground is they get their foot out just in time. Mm-hmm. However, they will smash their face a couple times, right? That because they will, but fail small. Like, you don't have to fall, boom, like just like do this. And then I always tell people, you can put a mattress out. No one said you can't make your own safety net or soft bed to land in. Like, I would never smash my head on the ground. Like, land, aim for the grass the first time. Let's make this a little easier for ourselves. But when we talk about the skills needed to do that, that's what we need to develop and get better at so that we can feel confident while we're leaning in. And that's what a second or a third or a fourth time founder has, is they've got more confidence in what they're doing. They understand the subtle nuances of bringing a product to the market. And that's what investors respond to. And that's why you'll hear like someone getting funded. I mean, they don't all need to be like market successes or billion-dollar companies. Sometimes you just need to have done something a few times, raised some money, acquired customers. But even taking that step is very risky. And that's what investors are looking for, is that you're willing to take the risk because you believe in this thing so much. And then lastly, I know this is a little bit of a thing, but you don't have to be the lead singer to be in the band. Learn the skill. If you find out that like you're a little bit more risk averse, but you kind of like the startup thing, find somebody that's working on a cool idea and go work for them. Your first step doesn't have to be in your own company. And so that's what I also say about like, don't hit your face on the ground. Like, go help another entrepreneur that's maybe a little bit further down the road, that's got some funding and resources. Learn how to do it. And then launch your big idea. Like, you don't, it's hard to do. If you've never done it before, this is like one of the hardest occupations, in my opinion, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a very scary one as well. You think how scary starting a new job is. Think about how scary starting a business is, getting funding, putting your house on the line, putting your future on the line. It's a very, very scary thing. And it does take a certain type of person to do it, you know, but you're absolutely right. Your world needs risk takers. Mm-hmm. And I love that little mattress scenario. You know, taking a risk doesn't mean you're in free fall.
Yeah.
Taking a risk just means I do have a safe net, but I'm still going to take the action.
Right.
I'm still going to take the risk.
Right.
You know, because if you don't take the risk, nothing ventured, nothing gained. Again, most common sense, not common practice. So listen, Nick, go on. Sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, but then to yes and your small comment, nothing that was ever big started big. Like, start small, pick off something that you can chew. And that way, if it doesn't work out the way that you wanted or the way that you expected, like, you didn't lose a lot. Like, we need to minimize how much we're putting at risk, you know, and that's your other goal, is to just be measured. And investors will reward you if you are measured in your failures.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. Because I think that if the founders, if they're looking for finance, if they're looking for investment, the chances are more people are going to invest in you if they've seen your experience of failing and getting up and doing it again, as opposed to never taking a risk before.
Correct.
You know, because you just might just crumble at the first hurdle because you've never taken a risk before. So yeah, absolutely. Well, I think there's going to be people listening here, Nick, you know, who are now, you've really got their brains thinking, maybe their emotions going, and I think, well, I never thought of that. So there's going to be people here who are listening who are either stuck, or they've hit a plateau, or they've hit this glass ceiling or something like that. And this episode has really gotten thinking, oh, well, maybe I can do it. To finish off, why don't you give us one practical step they could take if they're feeling stuck in this plateau, glass ceiling, whatever, and they don't know what to do? What is one practical step they could do, no matter where they are on their entrepreneur journey, to become unstuck and break through?
Yes. So here's what I would recommend. I want you to go on to Spotify. I want you to pick a song that you really like listening to. And then I want you to take a sheet of paper, and I want you to draw four boxes in the center of that sheet of paper. And over the course of that song, I want you to write down four things that make you really happy. And I want you to think about it this way. Imagine that you were in an airport and you were meeting someone that you haven't seen in like 10 years. And they're like, Gary, I haven't seen you in 10 years. Like, you look so happy. Like, what is going on in your life that's, you're just glowing? I want to know, what are the four things that you write on that sheet of paper that you're going to tell this person? And if those four things don't tie back to what you're currently doing, that's going to help you get on, like, whether you should keep going or whether you need to do something different. Because then you can start asking your questions like, is the thing I'm doing, especially if it's a startup or a small business, is the thing I'm doing going to get me to any of those boxes? Because if it isn't, then let's stop doing what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And if it is going to get you to those boxes, then we can ask the question, well, what's holding me back from getting to that step? And I think I'm sorry that it's a round way to get there. But my point is that the answer to getting unstuck is to not think about why you feel stuck. We need to get outside of that. We need to think differently about what's going on in our environment and how are we going to get, because then our problem solving engine and our problem solving brain can engage and we start focusing on the problem instead of how we're going to do this, AKA the solution. We always need to come back to what's the problem, what's getting in my way, what must be true for that problem to be solved.
Yeah, and absolutely. And just listening to you there, and there'll be founders here who've started years and years ago, who are probably in a position where they are today and found, well, how the hell did I get here? This is not where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. But by doing that exercise, which I think is absolutely fantastic, is going back and going, well, okay, then when you first started it, it was going to take you there. Now that you reversed a bit, you can see the wrong turn you took.
Right.
Now,
right.
Let's go back. But you can't do it if you're facing a dead end all the time. You got to come out of that dead end.
Yes.
See what's a bad thing and then move forward. So yeah, it works brilliantly if you're starting or if you're unhappy or even if you're dog leg in the tooth like you and I are and just think, okay, where was the wrong turn we did? You know, absolutely brilliant. So what a great, great thing to end on. So if people want to get hold of you, Nick, or learn more about what you do, what's the best way of getting hold of you?
Yeah, the best way, two ways. Find me on LinkedIn. That's a great way. And then, of course, you can look us up at iltacademy.io. We've got a lot of great programs available, and we're looking to come to communities all over the United States and the world. We've done one cohort in Kenya, which was really exciting. So, you know, we're just trying to share our knowledge and expertise with as many underestimated entrepreneurs as possible. And Gary, thanks for having me on.
It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you for your time, your insights. You've dropped so many insight bombs and truth bombs today that I'm sure people are just busy scrambling down and thinking, okay, what is the first step I should take, let alone what is the step I should take? So thank you very much for joining us, Nick. And ladies and gentlemen, thank you as well for joining us for what a great episode. And as always, please make sure that you are commenting on things that you've learned today so that other people can pick up the things that you've picked up. But more importantly, please make sure you share. We grow by, as Nick said, is learning from others. What have others learned that the landmines they've stepped on so we don't have to step on those landmines? Just share this episode out so people can learn from people like Nick and others can learn from the other guests that we've had as well. So until next time, keep striving, keep being profitable, and keep going. See you later. Bye-bye.